Well, welcome everybody to another Nexus Church Planting webinar. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Andrew Estes, and today I have a good friend with me, none other than the one and only Tim Foote. Tim has been with us, been serving in ministry for 30 years as a leader, pastor, coach, speaker, musician, presenter in Australia and in North America. Tim brings a diverse background in church planting and for-profit environments to his role as the CEO of Slingshot Group, which a lot of you guys are familiar with as a church staffing and nonprofit staffing organization. And throughout his time at Slingshot, Tim and the teams there has been helping over 1,000 churches and organizations and leaders with their staffing and coaching needs. And for a time, Tim has just been doing some incredible work in and through all of that. And so really wanted to tap him to just dive into his experience on building remarkable teams and team culture and all of these different things. He's also the host of the Slingshot Group podcast, which is just a phenomenal resource as he gets to interview a lot of different people from all over the place. So, Tim, thank you so much for joining us. And if you would, just kind of give us a brief snapshot of your life and ministry, kind of your journey into your current role as CEO of Slingshot.
Yeah, you bet, Andrew. It's great to be on with you today and to be partnering with Nexus in this conversation and the great work that you guys are all doing. But yeah, when you say 30 years of ministry, it makes me feel old, Andrew. And that's why I don't have any hair left. There was probably seasons where I just pulled it out. Started at the other side of the world, born and raised Tasmanian in a Christian home, which is pretty pretty rare in Australia because it's more of a secular environment. And went into ministry and working in the music industry in the 90s. I was a worship pastor in a church in Lower North Shore of Sydney, and my tent making job was doing gigs 3 to 5 nights a week, corporate functions, piano bars. I also wrote music, and but just loved ministry work. And then in 2002, my wife and I have been married 2 years. We responded to an invitation and a call to come and join the executive team at a church called Lifebridge in Longmont, Boulder County, Colorado. And it's still home church today, nearly 23 years later. It'll be in this coming March. And came and joined the exec team and also was the worship pastor, built ministry there for many years, probably about a decade. And then two friends of mine, Stan Endicott and Monty Kelso, started a staffing and coaching company called the Slingshot Group, primarily in the arts space. And nobody was doing it. This is 2007. And they were just formalizing what was happening naturally, leaders coming to them, asking them if they knew churches that were searching for staff and churches saying that they needed staff. And so they just formalized the process and started the Slingshot Group and coaching leaders to be better. And there were about 5 of us and a handful of coaching and staffing engagements. And in the next 10 years, it just grew exponentially. We shifted to all areas of ministry. And I took over our founding division, which was our worship arts division, and was able to build a team, a great team to serve churches around the country. And then in 2019, as my ministry trajectory changed, I took over our senior leadership division, which is lead pastors, executive pastors, spiritual development pastors, small group pastors, all that kind of thing, and gave oversight to our nonprofit division, which was building. And then at the start of 2022, I took over as CEO, and we serve, between 300 and 400 ministry organizations a year. We've worked with over 3,000 organizations over the last 17 years.
Wow.
And it's been amazing. And in the meantime, it became my full-time role. But I still, and this is just such a privilege, I still get to serve as teaching pastor at the church I moved to the U.S. To all those years ago. So I still get to teach 8 or 9 times a year. And I love still getting to do that, Andrew. But getting to see the landscape of churches in the United States and ministry organizations, nonprofits, is such an amazing experience. But also, for me, it's the art of the team. I've always loved teams back when I was a musician and playing in bands, to church ministry teams and nonprofit teams, and knowing that you may have a remarkable mission, but your remarkable mission absolutely deserves a remarkable and healthy team.
Yeah, that's fantastic, man. There's so many like thousand different directions that I want to be able to take this conversation. We could talk about lovely just ministry here in the beautiful state of Colorado together, and all of what that looks like, and talking about succession and building teams and culture, and especially even with the podcast, man. I love listening to that. Love listening to all of your phenomenal guests that you bring in there. But why don't you just walk us through, I mean, with the thousands of church teams that you get to experience, just their cultures and their staffing challenges and things of that nature. What are, when you're going into an organization or going into a church team and you're doing kind of your assessment, walking through that, what are some of those things as we look at just trying to build culture, build healthy, remarkable teams? What are some of the key indicators for you that, man, this church is killing it, they're doing a great job, they have a remarkable culture, or just maybe some of the red flags where you're just like, not so much, you know? So what are some of those key indicators for you when you go into a team that you're just like, this is a really healthy team?
Well, let's start with the healthy side, Andrew, because that's always a nice place to start. But when we go into a ministry organization and work with teams, we're always asking so many questions. I think that's why I love doing the podcast, Andrew, because I'm just naturally curious.
Yeah,
and that's what really defines, or is a huge value for us in team members at Slingshot, is curiosity. That we can ask the right questions, that we can listen to the answers and really determine the state of the team when we step into it. Because every problem in your organization tracks back to a person, either the need for a person on that team to move that team forward. And it could be a volunteer leader, because I know we've got churches of all shapes and sizes listening, all organizations. So it could be a new person on that team, or helping somebody on that team unlock a greater potential. And so that's why I love the work that we get to do, because we get to trace those challenges back to people and work out how to move teams forward. Now, when we're seeing healthy teams, they're teams that know who they are. They've got their why down. They're purpose driven with their remarkable mission, and they know their identity as a team, because identity determines function. And teams that are performing well and know who they are functioning in a healthy way. They're teams that listen. I mean, communications is a huge thing in church and ministry organizations. Everything communicates, but you've got to listen well to work out what to communicate. So often we talk and we don't do enough listening. We don't do enough question asking. Healthy teams ask great questions. Healthy teams cultivate systems and processes. Like, what kind of attention are you giving to the support systems that will help ministry thrive and move your mission forward? Healthy teams care for each other. They have relational equity. If we see breakdown on a team, it's usually because there's a lack of relational equity. When you don't develop relational equity at the 30,000 foot, 20,000 foot level, when things get stressful at the 1,000 foot level, you're writing checks your relational bank account can't cash, and that's when teams trend towards being unhealthy. We see that healthy teams allow tension. You know, I used to think that a healthy team was a team without tension. Now I actually get concerned when I don't see tension, because tension is the friction required to move mission forward. It's like the wheels of the car and the friction between the wheels and the road. You've got to have tension. As a leader, you get to decide whether it's healthy or unhealthy. Healthy teams take risks. You know, it's as a leader of a big team now, it's one of those things I pray for every week, is God, help me to trust you enough to take the risks that you're calling me to take, to keep stepping out of the boat. And then healthy teams collaborate. They listen in a healthy way to each other. That's a lot right there, Andrew. Do you want to dig into any of that before we go to some of the unhealthy things we see?
Oh my goodness, man. This is fantastic. Just the yeah, I love the curiosity piece, because that's I love your sign off that you always do with like your podcast, like stay curious and reach for the remarkable. I'm just kind of curious personally as to like kind of where that comes from. Just the why is that so important, the curiosity that a team asks great questions.
Well, for me personally, I've always been a naturally curious person. I think it's a little bit hereditary. My mum is a question asker. My grandparents were question askers, and I was always about asking questions. I actually worked in television back in Australia on a national kids show years ago. I'm not going to tell you the name of it because you might try and Google it and find me with hair, but I don't think there's anything out there anymore. But I can't think who it was said who said don't work with kids or animals. Well, I was working with both, and it was a kids' sports show, and we interviewed kids about the sports that they played, and it was all about bringing information out of kids, and you needed to ask great questions to do that. And then I think in my teenage years, Andrew, I used to get called quiz because I would ask so many questions. And it wasn't until later in my vocational life that a mentor, actually one of the founders of Slingshot, Stan Endicott, taught me that actually my proclivity for asking endless questions was less of a special need and more of a spiritual gift, because it really communicates care. It communicates interest, and it unlocks valuable information. When we're talking to a church about potentially partnering with them in either coaching or staffing work, if we just go in and tell them all the things that we can do for them, we could be speaking right past them. But if we get on a call with a potential partner and ask questions about where they are right now, what's happening in their reality right now, what do they need right now? That's going to give us all the information we need to know, A, whether we're the right people to help and serve them, and B, what's going to be a benefit to them in this relationship. And so when it comes to team health, if you want to get the best out of the people on your team, get to know them. Ask questions about their life. Ask questions about their personal mission. Ask questions about what motivates them. That allows you to lead them well. The most power leaders often think they've got to have all the answers. Leaders sometimes will get addicted to clarity, and we don't have any really when it comes to it. But it's not having the answers, it's asking the best questions.
Yeah, that's fantastic. No, just being able to stay curious and yeah, rather than dictate the direction or dictate some of those type of things, or just being allowing teams to even self-discover a little bit, or individuals to self-discover a little bit is powerful. You mentioned something about the tension, that the tension is the something required to move the mission forward. Talk a little bit about that. What was that quote that you said?
It's the friction. It's the
Friction.
attention is the friction that moves mission forward, that moves
Yeah.
ministry forward. And so I mean, I'm a reformed people pleaser. Now that I'm in my sixth decade, I'm like 50, 51. Now that I'm in that decade, I've learned that you can get into a whole lot of hot water if you just focus on trying to please people. You actually need to allow a certain amount of tension to move things forward. And you get to decide whether it's healthy or unhealthy as a team leader. Or if you're part of a team and not the leader, it's your job to speak up when you feel like it's getting unhealthy. So often, unhealthy teams that we walk into are where tension has been allowed to move to the unhealthy side of the ledger, and it can become an abusive environment. It can become dysfunctional. Now, there's a level of dysfunction in every organization. I say to our team all the time, if we didn't work with dysfunctional organizations, we wouldn't work with anybody. And we've got our own brand of dysfunction. It's when dysfunction moves to toxicity that it can become abusive. And that's what we always look out for. But you've got to allow tension to move mission forward. And one of the traps around that is when a team doesn't address unhealthy tension and they're not able to maximize their impact and influence. And you've got to be so careful with that.
Yeah, talk a little bit about just the nature of different size of teams that you kind of interact with, whether they're healthy and unhealthy. Because in our church planting context, most churches are like normal sized churches, like under 200 average sized churches. But I know that you guys work with anything and everything, the big name churches all the way down to just smaller churches. What are some things that smaller teams maybe even have an advantage of being able to serve in there? But then what are maybe even some of the ideal indicators of why churches stay small? And is that a function of team as well?
I would say firstly that small teams can be so nimble and that it's so exciting. I mean, we work with teams of churches of 150 to 13, 40,000. And invariably at the mega church level, and we know that mega church is anything I think above 2,000. At the mega church level, the lead pastor who might have been around for 20 years is always saying, "Ah, I remember when, we were 200, 500, and there was a staff of six, and we could just get pizza and we could change the whole direction of things in one meeting." I wish I could go back to those days. But it's interesting because I led at a church of several hundred in Australia, and I didn't have a team. I didn't have a staff team. I led a complete volunteer team, and I had to pitch vision to that volunteer team for them to see their volunteer work as important as their vocational paid work. So it's like, how are you pitching a beautiful vision of what it means as a volunteer leader to be a part of God's greatest enterprise in the world, which is a local church? And I mean, we talk about that now in our staffing work. We've got to tell a better story, a more beautiful story about what it means to serve on the front lines of ministry in paid roles, because there's a candidate crisis. I mean, we've been talking about this ever since COVID. You've heard staffing groups like Slingshot talk about the candidate crisis and how we need churches to be calling people to ministry because we've got this supply problem that can't meet the demand. But I would say that the things I learned in my first ministry of working with only volunteers prepared me for, I could not have done my next leadership role without that experience. So that's so important. The trap, Andrew, when you said what keeps churches from growing is focusing on preference rather than purpose. And to dig a little deeper into that, when you've got volunteer leaders, you don't want to lose them. I mean, you often feel desperate, but you're not, because God's going to provide. But you often feel desperate for those volunteer leaders. If you give them the power to take the mission hostage, and you bend to their preferences rather than keep pointing them to purpose, that will stop your organization from growing.
Yeah, that's so good. Goodness, so many different directions to go. But let's talk about the candidate crisis type thing, and especially in the context of leadership development within the church and volunteerism. I can't remember which episode you were talking about this, but you kind of mentioned either you or one of the people you were interviewing, or just kind of talking about, oftentimes we'll staff for things that a volunteer could do and miss an opportunity to like develop leaders and along in that. So I want to talk about the candidate crisis here in a second, but why don't you just talk for a little bit about just the nature of leadership development within the church. And I know you've like got an episode with like Brandon and Mac Lake, and that was kind of fun to listen to. But just, we've had Mac Lake come in to do some training with our team and leadership pipeline and things of that nature. But talk about just the need for leadership development in a volunteer culture and a staff culture and everything that looks like, especially as the pipeline seems to be drying up a little bit at least.
It's we see this as such a crisis or a challenge, but maybe God is using it to remind us that our number one job is to disciple people. And leadership development at its core is discipleship. And if we're not raising up leaders at a local level, and the beauty of a smaller church is that sometimes you don't have a choice. It's such an important calling and part of our role. You know, we see churches that get fat staff-wise, bigger churches, and it becomes this consumer mentality. And we know that that wasn't the intention of the early of the Acts church, of the early church. It was all about serving together, and it's so important for us to call people to that important role of service and develop leaders in that, give them the things they need. I mean, I can't speak highly enough of Mac Lake and the work that he is doing around leadership development. And I know you probably talk a lot about this in your webinar episodes, but that is such an important thing. And I think it might have been Brad Lomanek that chatted a little bit about this on the podcast and a couple of series ago. But we need to get really innovative in our current cultural moment to look at ways to allow people to be bivocational. And that might be just bivocational, as in your volunteer role is a high level volunteer role, because we're just in a different kind of culture right now. I mean, you go to Canada, you go to the UK, you go to Australia or New Zealand, and gosh, the percentage, I would say, might even be 65% of pastors in churches are bivocational. And they're bivocational because they have to be to survive. And they're bivocational because they believe in and love the ministry of the local church so much that they're willing to go and do almost a full-time job to allow them to do local church ministry. I think in American culture, sometimes we just got a little too fat, you know, and stuff is changing. And so what are those innovative ways that we can really call people to higher involvement and higher volunteerism in this next season of ministry in the US?
What are some just like some of your go-to churches or examples or some creative ways that churches are actually very intentionally raising up leaders? So one of the things that Nexus has kind of started to do just this year is offer what we're calling like the Leadership Institute, where we're kind of collectively connecting some of our churches together, but just some potential like high level leaders, but that aren't going to go to Bible college, that aren't going to maybe even be in full-time ministry by the end of it, but it's just an opportunity for them to be intentional in growing up their leaders. And it's just part of that culture that we want to help partner with our local churches to be able to develop further. But as you see churches that are doing just a great job at intentional leadership development, what are some of the creative ways that people are doing that?
Yeah, some of the bigger churches that have multi-campuses are starting to do that, calling people into that kind of residency role that mightn't necessarily leave their secular marketplace job, but they just want to invest more. You know that there are other movements too that are starting house churches that are requiring higher levels of leadership. I think we're going to have to get real creative to reach Gen Z because with the gospel, because they're all about authenticity. They're all about what's real about this, what's relational about this, how is my life going to grow as part of this? I mean, I look at family members involved in church movements, even in Australia, that are just so unique. In hey, it's a group of smaller gatherings that meet together once a month for some kind of gathering in a park, and that's their expression of church. But what I love about that, and there's things I miss about that because, you know, I'm a local church guy, probably more in the traditional sense of the word. I love gathering on a Sunday for worship and teaching. But what I see in these movements that are growing up is that focus on life discipleship. And what that means and what people bring to the table that are different from the conventional roles in a conventional church environment.
Yeah, that's really good. I think one of the things that Will Mancini often says is that, you know, one of our greatest limitations is our imagination as church leaders. Mm-hmm. Just that we have these set ideas of like you volunteer in this way or you grow in this way. And
right.
rather than just being creative in the fact that how we can actually speak into people's lives and just see how God is using them and moving them in that direction and just assisting and coming alongside that is just fascinating.
Well, that's where the tension comes in, because when you kick against the norm or when you push against the norm, it creates tension. And as leaders, for us to allow those conversations, that's when we're going to move forward in new ideas.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Talk briefly about just in the cultural moment, like post pandemic, with where we're at right now. And, you know, some people have just, or that you've even mentioned, like, you know, staffing groups, like there's just a smaller pool than there used to be. Just be curious to know, like, when would you say like your candidate pool was like overflowing, and what happened to get to where we are today?
It was definitely, I mean, search in church space has always been a challenge, and it's definitely a calling for us at Slingshot. And we want to bring health to those transitional seasons, both for the church and for the leader. But pre-pandemic, we certainly had a lot more leaders stepping into church space. Pandemic happened, a lot of political tension. I mean, we know that, and people were just burning out in droves in ministry. And frankly, ministry wasn't becoming an attractive place for young leaders to be called to. In fact, we would often hear that church leaders were leaving the church and going in a marketplace to heal and recover. And that should not be the case. I mean, the serving in church should be the ultimate in our investment vocationally. That's God's call on our lives. I mean, we absolutely need believers in the marketplace, because what a mission field that is. But also, some interesting things happened in the pandemic which changed things. People started to prioritize lifestyle. So people moved to where they wanted to live, because suddenly everything was virtual. Suddenly we were limited to being at home. It's like the mass exodus in cities like New York and those kinds of metropolitan centers. People were starting to move to smaller towns. It's like why you see towns like, Wichita, Kansas, and Columbus, Ohio, and these kinds of towns that are growing rapidly, because people are choosing lifestyle. I read an article the other day that Americans' mobility, meaning Americans moving state for jobs, is at an all-time low, the lowest percentage, I think something like 8.2%, since that stat has been recorded. And it's because I believe people have decided where they want to live, and they're not going to move from there, which is why we've got to get creative in the church space about what we offer to potential leaders that we want to bring onto our teams. And also, we have to be so creative in work environments. Like, people don't want to be in the office from 9 to 5 every day of the week. But churches love to be in the office. And so actually, church planters, coffee shops. So it's a different thing. It's how do we get creative to draw people back into the ministry space, when sometimes we can be pretty rigid in what we ask for, and we miss out on leveraging great leaders.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's even heartbreaking, I think, even in restoration movement world, when it just feels like every other year, like some college is closing or
right.
Whatever that happens, and just a lack of a desire to want to be in that ministry role.
Yeah.
And that's just been interesting to watch. One of the things I kind of want to pivot and just talk to you a little bit about succession, and just because this is what you deal with, like on the daily basis of working with teams that you've experienced personally just a couple of years ago, and taking over for a nonprofit and or the Slingshot group, and all of the nuances that kind of play into that. What are some of the things that you've seen when successions go really well, and some of the things that are missing when successions don't go well?
Yeah.
At whatever level of leadership, like obviously the senior leader position, top lead, like that's a big deal, but even at lower levels as well.
People ask us when they should start investing in succession, and our answer is always the same: today. You need to start investing in it today. Whatever age you're at, you need to start thinking about succession, because succession can come in so many ways. I mean, it can come in the way of emergency planning. Something can happen to your leader, and suddenly you're in a succession journey you never thought you'd be in. You know, ideally for us, Andrew, we love to come into an organization a couple of years ahead of time and work with that organization. The current leader of the organization should not be driving their own succession. It just doesn't go well to have outside help to have the important discussions that you need to have is so important. But like you just referred to, succession needs to happen at every point of your organization. Now, if you're a staff of one with 6 or 7 key volunteer leaders, you need to be looking at who the key volunteer leaders are behind those leaders. I'm doing it slingshot for all our key leaders, is who's coming up behind you. But it's so important to invest in succession every day for it not to be the elephant in the room. That's the hard thing with Gen Z leaders these days, is they don't want anything to be off the table. If succession is 10 years down the road, let's talk about it now. I mean, let's keep that conversation. So often it's the elephant in the room and the senior leader doesn't want to talk about it. Even if it's, hey, I've got energy in the tank, I'm not ready to make a move for another 5 to 10 years. At least being open-handed enough to have conversation about it is so, so important. And then the healthiest transitions we see in succession are internal. That points to healthy culture. We love it when we see internal succession at any point in an organization, any role. In order for that to happen, you've got to be investing in your culture all the time. You've got to be platforming your leaders all the time. You've got to, as a leader of your organization, you've got to think like a venture capitalist and invest in your people and step back and allow them to lead, even if it means they're going to fail, because we know that you learn most from your failures. And then when you identify a successor, you've got to set them up for success. And so that's allowing them to lead in certain areas, showing them what to do, letting them do, and then starting to step back and allowing them to do it.
Yeah, that's can you share just a little bit about your story? Because you were kind of an internal, obviously, candidate, had been with Slingshot for some time, and just a little bit of your story in succession and things that maybe went well, things that maybe you'd probably do differently. And again, you're only just a couple of years into it. And so I think I've heard you mention also before that there's, you know, probably at least like 4 to 5 years before like the culture is totally shifted towards either allegiance towards the new senior leader or just something of that nature. Like, just kind of share me just a little bit of your story in succession.
Yeah. Having walked through it myself and coached other senior leaders through internal succession, it's often the smoothest because if it's an internal succession, it means the culture is healthy and it just needs to be built upon. Now, I want to give voice to the fact that often it needs to be an external succession because culture needs to shift and change and you need new energy and new ideas. For us, that wasn't the case. I'm so grateful to our co-founders, Stan and Monty. They invested in me and I had multiple roles over the years. I mean, I led our Worship and Creative Arts division. I led our senior leadership division. I was able to provide oversight to our nonprofit division. So I'd had all kinds of experience. It's interesting, Stan said to me and another couple of leaders in our organization years ago, if you're going to grow in this organization, you won't have the same job in 2 years' time. And I didn't. I kept on evolving and moving and things kept shifting and changing. And when they approached me to take over as CEO, it felt like the natural next move. Now, they have been amazing in the fact that they have stayed supportive. They're no longer involved in the day-to-day, but oh my gosh, they're so supportive and they're champions of my leadership. That's been huge. I mean, their handoff and how healthily they did that is what went well. What was a challenge is I took over January 1 of 2022, and we just come off a huge growth year for us. And you don't usually want to take over after a huge growth year. Because it breaks all the systems, and then we marched into 2022, and you'll all remember that, you know, that the economy got tight and inflation went up and the costs of goods and services all went up. And so I had a lot of juggling to do, and I probably have been flying at a lower altitude in leadership for longer than I would have liked, because I've needed to be a part of, okay, what are the systems and processes we need to shore up here so that we can grow in a healthy way in our next growth spurt? I mean, the great thing is that our level of production has stayed at this new high, which is fantastic. But we've had to kind of, I know what the saying is, change the wings of the plane while you're on it, that kind of thing. But it's, how do we continue to evolve our culture? We were a building company for so many years, and we're still building, don't get me wrong. But now it's, how do we scale what's unique about what we do and maintain and build upon what's unique about what we do? And that comes down to culture as well. And so for me, it was, how do I invest in culture? I invest in my leadership team. I think it was Marcus Buckingham who said to you as a senior leader, you're not the culture carrier of the organization, your team leaders are. So I focused on investing in those team leaders, in championing our values with them and making sure they were pushed through the organization because we were growing. I mean, we almost doubled in size as far as our team. So how do we make sure those values of being spirit-led, innovative, relational, determined, winsome, how do we continue to push those forward? And that's still to be a part of what we do. And the fact that we're about ministry. I mean, that's why we got into this. We're about our Father's business, yes, but it's ministry. It's absolutely ministry.
Yeah, that's awesome. I don't know if this is true, but is that a vision frame over your shoulder on the wall?
It's interesting. Whenever I'm talking to somebody who has an Oxano background, they always point out the vision frame over my shoulder. Yes.
So here's, that's awesome. So here's my question. How much of that and just the organization with the shifting, because something always shifts, something always changes with the heart of a leader moving from one to another. How much of that has shifted, or has everything just remained exactly the same since when you took over?
It's absolutely shifted, but the spirit of it has remained the same. And so Monty was our previous CEO, Stan, co-founder, was our VP of culture. Both of those guys have been huge influences and mentors in my life, but I'm obviously going to have a different flavor of that initial vision. I would say who we are hasn't changed. How we're continuing to evolve and grow is ever changing. And it's not just my vision. It's the vision of the team that I've surrounded myself with, because I don't want to do this if I haven't got a great team around me. That's what has always been most fulfilling to me in every season of life. And I believe whenever you step into a new leadership season, it's a sum of your experiences to that point. That's why we always say to leaders that come to us wanting a change, has God released you yet? Because if he hasn't, then you're not done being prepped for what's next. But we're always evolving. And I want to gather a group around me that collectively, our missions intersect with the mission of the organization we're a part of. And that's going to influence that horizon storyline, that ultimate horizon vision. And so I would say the spirit of it is the same, but it's uniquely always changing and shifting and evolving.
Yeah. Is that always difficult? I assume so for like a previous leader in one sense to be able to see what they've kind of established and then just to see the shift and change. Like when you talk about Stan and Monty, like how do they perceive that, or what has that been? What does that look like?
They've been great. And I will call them too and ask them what they think of this or what they think of that. But the beauty of the amount of years I serve with them is I'll often just automatically think, well, what would Monty do in this situation? What would Stan do in this situation? And they were so complimentary as leaders to each other and deferential too. I mean, they set the tone, the relational tone of our team. And so they've been incredibly supportive. In fact, I think it was either Stan or Monty that said, we think you're going to grow this bigger than we ever could have. And so that, you know, that kind of confidence, and whether or not I will, we'll see. But that kind of confidence and trust, that's gas in the tank. That is absolutely will. And that's what, I mean, it's back to our slingshot metaphor. That's always been a powerful metaphor for us. It's tension, it's stretching, it's pulling, that when released in the right circumstances with the right tools, that's what's going to catapult you forward. That's what's going to aim you forward. And that's what it's been for us.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I appreciate you sharing that. Yeah, talk to me about just a little bit about building trust on teams. And I want you to start in the church space, in particular for smaller teams. Like I don't know if there's like a couple of like even exercises that you do as a team leader, or things that you encourage or coach towards to building trust, because obviously that's a massive foundation for the majority of teams. And we've talked a little bit about that already, of just like understanding your people, understanding all, and it just starts with relationship. But being able to build trust, you know, I mean, you look at Lencioni's Five Dysfunctions of a Team, like it's the foundation. You know, Henry Cloud's book that just came out, you know, called Trust, all these different things. What are some practical ways that on a staff team that you have built trust in the past, or that
I mean,
you coach people towards?
You said it right then and there, and it's so often we make it more complicated than it needs to be. But it starts with a relationship, and so often that's what we neglect. You cannot shortchange the relationship process. And that first couple of years of working together are vital years in which to build that trust. And so how do you schedule relational connection that's not about work? How do you get together once every month or 2 weeks or however often you can do it and spend 45 minutes not talking about work and the 15 minutes, last 15 minutes talking about work? How do you have one-on-ones with volunteers and leaders so that they feel heard? One-on-ones where they drive the agenda, so you give them opportunity to talk. How do you not be too controlling as a leader? Often, you know, my team will joke with me. They'll say, I'll ask a question and they'll say, is that really a question or is that a statement? And I have to say to them, no, I trust you. I want you to lead me in this. And it's, you know, I spoke to a CEO a couple of years ago when I took over this role, and he said, being from a creative background, you're going to come at this from a creative viewpoint, which is going to be helpful. But he said, leadership is just about getting the right people in the room and letting them lead. And trust is when you hand off leadership. You know, I'll never say to my team, you work for me, we work together. And I'll always want to allow different team members to lead the team at different times in their area of expertise. And when you do that, that's just deposits in the trust bank. And so it's having enough relational equity there that when you do need to give correction and constructive feedback, they know, the people that you lead know that you care about them, and they're going to receive that feedback and they're going to grow.
Yeah, that's great, man. When you so, and this isn't maybe relevant for some of our churches, but I'm just curious as to, like, because I know that Slingshot is fairly virtual, right? The majority of your team is not
completely
in Colorado. What are some of the ways that you've built trust on a virtual team?
So interestingly enough, virtual was easier pre-pandemic than post, and we've been virtual the whole time, and it just requires more investment post. Which has been really interesting. We do have more in Colorado now than we began in California. And I think we've tipped over having more people in Colorado, but still we don't have an office presence. But the important thing is, and we just actually, at time of this webinar last week, we had our annual gathering where we all come together. And in 3 days, we cram in just a ton of connection, relational connection, vision casting, learning, development, all kinds of stuff. And it's always just such a great time together. But with our individual teams, it's making time to get together. So we'll do that once a quarter. But also when we're doing Zooms, is allowing downtime on a Zoom. So I don't push into the agenda too quickly. I allow us to imagine that we're walking into a room. And what do you do when you walk into a room? You talk about a bunch of things for a while. You just let the room breathe and you find out where people are at. You've got to be so intentional in how you do that. And then it's just check-in. Like, people share stuff with you, make sure you stay connected, because we're not in an office where we're just stopping by each other in the break room or in each other's offices and catching up. So you've got to make sure you still give attention to that in different ways, and utilizing the tools. I mean, we use Slack, and that's how we stay together, or connect together. And we have lots of different channels to celebrate things and to do random thoughts and ideas. And we have divisional Slack channels, and it's so important to utilize the tools we have now as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic, man. I appreciate that. It's just been an interesting season of kind of stepping out of local ministry several years ago and just being on mostly virtual teams. You miss some of that, just the regular interaction and stuff. But obviously not relevant to some of our local churches. So we'll dive back into that. But
Sometimes it is. I mean, sometimes you've got people on listening to this webinar who are staff of one, and that can be pretty lonely. And it's so important to create, you got to create your own local team too. I mean, I've got leaders locally here that I'll meet with to give me a sense of that, of accountability and regular connection.
Yeah, that is very important. And I think it's, even when we think creatively about just connection and like our current circumstances, like the current church that I'm at, I have a couple of neighbor families down the street, but we all have like a ton of children. And so we started like a small group, like we do life together, but we started a small group on Zoom that starts at like 8 p.m. like once kids are down.
Right.
Do something like that just to be creative and how to use that. And so I think
you do have a ton of children, Andrew.
We do. I do. Yeah, our fourth one is 11 months old right now. So
God bless you.
Life is full for sure. Well, Tim, I'm so grateful for everything that you've been able to offer us, and just with your life and experience, and just the sheer amount of teams and the cultures that you walk into. What are you most hopeful for the church this year and moving forward?
What I'm most hopeful for, Andrew, is that we can be a city on a hill. You know, it's so often we're looking to marketplace and corporations for tips on how to look after teams and how to thrive as teams. And I mean, you look back over the ages and all the great things came out of church, you know, artistry, healthcare, I mean, all kinds of stuff going. I hope for a renaissance, I think you would say. Sometimes my Australian accent gets me, I'd say a renaissance. A renaissance of the church where we can see the health, leadership health growing out of the church. And we're a city on a hill example of how to love teams and look after teams and how to move the greatest mission, the great commission forward, and do it in a way where there's healthy tension and there's relational equity and there's risk taking and there's new ideas and the church being a place that great leaders want to serve. That's what I would hope for.
Yeah, that's fantastic, man. Well, Tim, thank you so much for your time. I'm so grateful for opportunity to be able to get to speak with you. And yeah, why don't you leave us with your sign off, man?
Oh, well, thank you for that. And I just want to say thank you to you, Andrew, for having me on, and to Nexus for the great work that you guys are doing and how you're advancing the great commission. So thank you for the work that you're doing. And I would say to everybody listening, stay curious and reach for the remarkable.
There it is. Thanks, man. Appreciate you, Tim.
Thanks, Andrew. Thank you.